Hi, this is David McQueen, and welcome to the David McQueen Podcast. My guest for this episode is Tamara Littleton, the CEO and founder of the Social Element Agency and the co-founder of crisis simulation company Polpeer. This conversation was a long time coming, and I hope you enjoy it as much as we did. Lovely to have you. Lovely to meet you, Tamara. Okay, I'm gonna let everybody into a little secret before I jump into the questions. I have been a big fanboy of Tamara for years, right? I've loved the work that she does in this space, and it's a similar field that I get excited when I see her content and I see her online. So I would have loved to have met her in person before this, but I'm meeting her, well, I am, because I can see her on video. I can see that lovely smile. So I'm just letting everybody know that. So if you sense an excitement in my voice, it's because I've finally been able to meet Tamara. So Tamara, my first question to you is what did you have for breakfast?
Oh, David, well, thank you. It's I feel the same. I think we got overexcited when we crossed paths at the Marketing Academy and didn't quite actually get to meet in person.
Yes.
So breakfast, do you know what? I don't know if this is good or bad, but I've now got into the habit of I tend to skip breakfast. There's part of me that always sort of thinks that, you know, you should set yourself up for the day, but it's just one of those things that I just tend to sort of skip breakfast. Mm. However, because I'm trying to sort of be more sort of sensible around my days. If I'm working from home, which I tend to do quite a bit, I will build lunch becomes my sort of main thing. And I actually do a bit of cooking and, you know, sort of take a proper break at lunchtime. So I kind of, when I'm up, I'm literally awake, checking my phone, I'm bang straight in it, skip breakfast, get on with it. But I kind of calm down about lunchtime.
Okay. Well, I'm going to tell you mine. Mine was a cup of tea and a salt beef bagel, which my EA got me, and it was gorgeous. All fired up now. My glucose is just running through my body. Okay, so I'd love to, just as part of this conversation, just I'm really curious as to how you got into your leadership journey or your interest in this area and what you do yourself.
Yeah, it feels like there's a kind of a sort of series of accidents in many ways, but so I started off, I suppose the beginning part of my career, I was in publishing, and the sort of the early leadership part, because I had my first job in publishing and then got a much more sort of a bigger job. So I wasn't leading in the first one, but the next job was a company called Chapman & Hall. It was academic publishers. And I became fascinated. So I'm going to sort of date myself, but this was the sort of the mid 90s. So very, very early internet days where there were experiments being done with online publishing and loading PDFs up onto the World Wide Web so that people could download them. Yeah. And that's what I was getting involved in. And the thing was that the guy who was above me got headhunted because these were still like super skills to have at the time. Mm. And I was coding and I was loading files on the internet. And so suddenly I found myself leading a team because they were like, well, she knows what she's doing. He's gone. Tamara, can you actually just lead this online publishing team? And I felt it came quite naturally to me. I think I was just quite a nurturing sort of leader and I really wanted to get the best out of the team. But I think what was really good at that particular company is that my boss really took me seriously. So I was in my early 20s. Mm-hmm. But I was coming up with organizational structural, you know, this is how I want the department to be structured. I was coming up with some quite sort of, you know, serious kind of leadership skills. And I was very, very encouraged. And I then went to the BBC. That was my next sort of big job. And again, these sort of series of accidents, I left Chapman & Hall. I took a job as an intranet consultant, again, when intranets were massive. And I actually broke my wrist and my right wrist and my left elbow at the same time. I was I was trying to break into a house. Now, bear with me. I was helping.
I'm listening. I'm good.
No judgment. I was actually helping a neighbour who had got locked out, and I decided that what would be the sensible thing is to climb a ladder and try and get in. But I did that stupid thing where I stood right at the very, very top, and then I had my foot on a pipe or something, and it cracked. The whole thing went backwards. I fell off this ladder. Broke my right wrist, left elbow, and they let me go, which was really cruel, actually. But in the end, I know I can see your face for the listeners, but you're looking. I don't think that was legal, quite frankly, David. But do you know what? I'm such a sort of optimistic person, and I feel like these things sometimes just happen. I ended up getting an amazing job at the BBC, and I ended up running the online team at the time. It was the webmasters again. So this is now late 90s, still early web days, but such a pioneering time. And I think, again, I was sort of just entering my sort of late 20s, early 30s. I was given a lot of space to lead. And the BBC, I think this is one of, I will always be a big supporter of the BBC. It was such a great training for me. And they invested in me, and they put me on a sort of young leaders, you know, course, one of those ones where you're actually doing building rafts and all working together outside, which I would probably laugh at these days. But oh my God, it was amazing, you know, to be put in charge. And I was one of the youngest there, and it was, you know, it was good that they invested in me. So I think I would say I had people who just let me go, but also saw my talents, but then trained me as well.
I love that. It evoked some memories in me when you said that. I was thinking of when I first started using Lotus Notes, Lotus 1, 2, 3, before we migrated over to Excel. And again, to your point, being able to create PDFs and pull them online, I was just like, oh my God, this brings back such memories of my first work. So thank you for evoking that memory.
No, I was just going to say, I always say that the geeks shall inherit the earth.
Yes, we will. Oh, yeah, we will. We will. I love going off on tangents, but I was doing some leadership, a leadership coaching session for an executive group this week. And I came in and I think they had this assumption, this guy's going to come in and he's going to talk about this inclusion stuff. And then I started to talk about investing in tech and I'm really geeked out. And you can see these guys looking at me like, okay, that's not what I expected. I'm like, yeah, trust me, I'm a geek when I'm ready. I really am. But I love that they were, and this speaks so much of the reputation that you have anyway. I love that there were individuals who took that time and invested in you and saw your potential.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, a lot of the conversations from mutual individuals who know you is that you are a very supportive person, a champion of other people's. And it makes so much more sense now, because now you're telling me this is what's actually happened to you. To see you replicate that behavior yourself is so, so important. And that, for me, it's refreshing.
Thank you.
Absolutely refreshing. I say that because sometimes explaining that to individuals, you know, the whole point of leadership is to do it by example. Like, sometimes it goes over people's heads because it's like, I've got a title, I've got a KPI to meet and a target. But that bit of nurturing and understanding potential and talent, I think, is incredibly powerful.
And I think it's a creating a space where people can, you know, fail and learn from their mistakes. And, you know, I sort of say that everything is a learning opportunity, even, you know, if we pitch for a client and don't win it or something like that, it's okay. We can learn, what did we do? What can we do differently? So I think giving people that space, and that's, again, yeah, I feel that I was given that space to sort of test and learn.
Love that. So do you have any specific leadership role models that you can think of, or anybody that, like, you know, whether it's personal or professional, that really shaped your own journey?
Well, I think I feel like we might have some sort of people that we, that I keep listening. Sorry, I'll just say that again. Okay. I feel like some of the people that I really admire are people that you admire. So Kim Scott, who sort of wrote Radical Candor, fan. Brené Brown, can't get enough Brené Brown, quite frankly. Yes, and Brené. Then I think Susan Cain, who wrote about quiet, so introverted leaders. And that's something that I kind of that resonates with me, because I'm a sort of ambivert. So I'm tend to be a bit introverted. I can have my extrovert side, and I get quite excited about things, and you know, quite passionate, and get me on karaoke. You can't get me off karaoke, that kind of thing. So I have that side, but I tend to be a bit more sort of thoughtful, bit quieter. And I think just realizing that that's okay, because a lot of the time you see these leaders who are perhaps very public leaders, and they're often very charismatic, very out there, very extroverted. And, you know, I found that it was important for me not to be too focused on what other people were doing. You know, I admire people like Steve Bartlett. I mean, I think he's amazing. But I'm not him. I'll never be him. And if I try and sort of track my own progress against other people, it makes me feel a little bit like not great about myself. So I just stopped doing that. Yes. So I take sort of inspiration, and I take inspiration from, you know, people like you, and just I take little nuggets from everybody, and I feel like that makes up the package instead.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. I'm like you. I'm an ambivert. My daughters were laughing at me because they're like, "Dad, I'm sure there are people out there who just think you're like extrovert full on, but they don't know that you love your quiet time, don't you?" And I'm like, "Yeah,
oh yeah."
Being able to have that time to just charge and just reflect, as you said.
Totally, totally. I think I just need that alone time. Otherwise, I'm no good to anyone. And sometimes I just need to be in a cinema by myself or watch Netflix. And then, you know, my partner, she has two kids, and it's very, very busy when I'm around her. And I love it. I do quite like a little space as well.
Yes. No, definitely, definitely. So, as you know, one of the things I love to write about and pontificate about, whether I'm on stage or writing on LinkedIn or you're doing podcasts, is I'm really always curious as to what good leadership looks like. Not perfect, because I don't believe in perfect leadership, but I'm really curious from your point of view, what does good leadership look like for you?
I would say that it's definitely about the vision. So being able to articulate a vision that brings people along with you. Talent, so attracting talent, perhaps being able to spot that talent, you know, what we were saying earlier, that people sort of believed in me. I like to sort of spot upcoming talent as well. Creating a safe space. So I think for me, it's all about culture. So if you have a great culture, but what does that culture actually mean? So I think, you know, giving a space where people can thrive, that they can bring their true authentic self to work. That's so important. And also that they are given that space to thrive and also test and learn, as we said. So I think, yeah, to sort of summarize, I'd say it's vision, talent and culture.
Yes. Love that. Love that. And I'm going to just play with this a bit in terms of the work that you've done and you've experienced. How have you been able to reiterate or emphasize to people that these things are really important, having that vision, having that culture, being able to have that awareness of potential and safety? Have you been able to not so much convince but alert people to how this really can show up for them?
Yeah, well, I think it's not just sort of saying we have a great culture and then suddenly you've got a great culture. You have to really work on that. Yes. And you have to sort of adapt every year, and you have to really sort of understand what people want when they're working at you know, my agency, the social element. But, you know, just small things really matter. So, for example, you know, when we brought in a whole thing around pronouns, mm-hmm. and making sure that people are comfortable sharing their pronouns, but also making it much more of a proactive thing in meetings, changing it in our emails, signatures. And it's something that is really important to make people feel that they matter and that they're included. And so, you know, that is just one aspect, but it was, you know, it could be something that, you know, people don't necessarily pay much attention to, but I really think that that matters. And I think also for me, being an out gay CEO is really important to sort of set the tone that, I want everyone to feel comfortable about bringing their best self, bringing their true, authentic self to work. So, you know, I am passionate about diversity, equity, inclusion, and we work with, you probably know, Creative Equals, and it's for me, it's all about measuring just where we are and how can we be better. So I think it's about proving that you are investing, and because that will make the culture better as well. So I suppose it's not just, yeah, so it's going back, you can't just, the culture just doesn't, you know, come from nowhere. It takes effort and proactivity. But I think it is also, it just comes from the top. So I have an amazing executive team, and, you know, our whole philosophy is genuine human connections. But genuine human connections has become our thing of how we help brands have a genuine human connection with their consumers. You know, when we're working with people like Dr. Pepper and Visa and Oreo cookies and everything. But that genuine human connections has become our mantra for the agency as well, because it's all about how do we connect with each other. And ultimately, it's just being a decent person. And I started the company. I mean, I can't believe this. I'm still in denial about this, but we've been going for 20 years. This is our 20th year. And for me, I set out to create an agency that I would want to work at. So I always had the vision that this was going to be a big global agency. I was very ambitious. I'm very competitive as well. And I was kind of like, I want to be the best. I want to have a biggest agency, but I want it to be the best agency in terms of, I really want people to want to work here and to feel, you know, cared for.
Mm. I'm going to go off on a slight tangent here.
Please do.
Is that right? One of the things I've always been fascinated, and we kind of slightly touched on it offline before we started, was around your company, Polpio, I hope I pronounced that correctly.
Yes, you have.
And around the crisis simulation, that bit has always fascinated me. I'm like, one day I'm going to just knock on your door and I'm going to creep up behind you and say, look, just tell everybody I'm the consultant at the back of the room. I want to see this go live. But what really has fascinated me about this is that there are leaders always feel that they need to have the answers in the moment.
Yeah.
So many leaders. And what has fascinated me about the simulation is that in my head, okay, and I haven't seen it, but in my head, you're going to throw something at them and people are going to be like, oh, what WTF? Or I swear on my podcast, I'm saying, you know, but what the hell? And you've created this scenario. So I'm really curious, just without obviously you giving away stuff, I'm fascinated by the concept, but I'm really curious as to how leaders do respond in that moment to that crisis, and they've got to be able to manage it. What are the kind of things that you see really coming out and then people having to correct accordingly some of the assumptions that they've had?
Oh, it's absolutely fascinating. I think, yeah, so I co-founded Polpeo with my co-founder, Kate Hartley, who's much more from a PR crisis background than I'm from the social media background. So the combination is really effective. So that was about 7 years ago. And it's fascinating. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. We put teams through a crisis simulation. So it could be like a reputational issue, something breaking on social media. So whether it's like a rogue employee or data breach or something like that. And, yeah, we are throwing things at them all the time. And why it's actually become really good leadership training as well is because in that moment, you're not expecting things. And, of course, you know, you're brain is wired to do the sort of fight or flight or freeze. And often that's what happens is that people will freeze. So our philosophy is it's better that they are going through this simulation so that when it happens for real, they've already had that rehearsal, a bit like military training that you kind of practice. So when it happens, you're actually a lot calmer. Mm. But in that moment in the simulations, we see people really losing their temper. For example, they get too stressed. You often see people dominating who kind of suddenly decide that they know exactly what to do but maybe they're not actually taking people in the right direction. Yes. And then it's great seeing people sort of standing up for themselves and say, no, I think this is what we need to do. So it's always a test of teamwork as well, because the teams that start functioning really communicating well, dividing their roles, and have high levels of trust, that's when you see the magic happen. And I suppose, in a way, a simulation, it's like it's the ultimate vulnerability. You are being attacked. You don't know what's going to happen. You don't know where the next things are going to sort of come from. And you have to just step up, work with people, and, you know, lead. And sometimes that leading is taking a step back and making sure that the team are doing the right things, that they've got the right roles and responsibilities. And then even just small things that you wouldn't even think about, but breathing and drinking water, staying hydrated in the middle of a crisis is crucial, because on social media, people are really nasty. You've seen that, you know, and people are nasty to brands in particular, and they will jump on the bandwagon, and everyone loves a good pile on. So if you are on the receiving end of that and you're trying to lead through a crisis, you need to just get some, perspective. You need to breathe. You know, you need to have a little sort of, let's all stop and have a status review. So it's like the best possible leadership training.
No, I love it. And I love it. And I think to the reason for my query as well is in 2020, when Black Lives Matter came out and a lot of clients were piling in, trying to throw up black squares and making promises, I was saying to people, don't do it. Don't do it. Yeah. And I remember that's around that time I kind of like first heard about your organization or what it was you were doing. And there were some times in my mind, I was thinking, I wonder what tomorrow would do in the situation or what advice you'd actually be giving. Because there was something around, to your point, stop reacting and respond.
Yeah.
Right? Stop doing the knee jerk. Think about what it is you're going to do and how you are going to lead. And I love what that bit you said around the embodiment, right? So it's somatic. It's got to be, how am I drinking? How am I sleeping? How am I managing my stress and all that kind of stuff? I love that. I absolutely love that. Thank you. Thank you for indulging me in that. But like, I really wanted to kind of like dig deep into that. We'll go more when we meet for coffee in person.
Absolutely.
So that takes me on to my next question. So what's one of the toughest decisions you've actually had to make or have had to make as a leader?
So I look back over the sort of 20 years and it's always been people related. I mean, it's one of the hardest things to do when you have to sort of make decisions about letting people go, for example. And I think it will never be an easy thing. And I kind of don't want it to be an easy thing, because that would mean that I'd somehow lost a bit of my soul, I suppose. But it's just that realization that not everyone is going to be with you for the whole journey, and trying to sort of accept that, but understand that and think about, oh, actually it's maybe best for them as well as, you know, it's perhaps just that time. But I never find those decisions easy. And sometimes, you know, we've had to let go of clients as well. And it comes back to what I was saying about creating a safe space for people, is that, you know, if we're working with someone and we don't feel that we're being, that it's a respectful relationship, for example, or we're not getting something out of it, or they've sort of consistently just squeezed you down in prices and everything and don't have that respect, then those are the times it makes me very pleased to sort of be running an independent agency where I can just say, I'm sorry, it's not you, it's me, or actually, no, it is you.
I'm going to use that. I'm so going to use that. That's the best way to fire a client. It's not, actually, it is you. I love that. But yes, it's a recurring theme for a lot of individuals when you have to, it's that people element, right? Because we are dealing with people's emotions as well as everything else. Okay. Talk to me about succession planning. What does that look like for you?
Yeah, so as you can imagine, I suppose, you know, if I run a crisis company as well as a social media agency, I'm obsessed about succession planning. And I sort of built one many, many years ago, and then we sort of adapt it. But I suppose ultimately I've been investing in my executive team, and I have an incredible team. And so it's all been about making sure that they are ready to lead the agency. My overall plan is that they're running everything and I can just have more lunches. That's kind of my goal. That's what succession plan looks to me. But, you know, we have really taken training seriously. We invest in something called DISC training, which is, you know, similar to the Myers-Briggs. You'll know all of this stuff. I'm preaching to the choir, I'm sure. But, I think that's been really useful to understand that we've got a good balance of characteristics in the agency. So focusing on that and looking at that next level of leadership as well. So you've got the exec team, but who are the rising stars in the agency? How do you invest in them so that you're looking at that, you know, what happens next when the executive team are sort of, you know, want to sort of let go a little bit more, whatever. So I think it's just constantly looking at the talent, but being honest about it and having, you know, this is the structure, but also on the crisis point, you know, we had things ready for what happens if I go under a bus. I don't like to think about it, but we're ready. We have these discussions. And I remember when I was in hospital for about three or four years ago. And I ended up being off for 2 months. And honestly, the team were incredible. Everyone just picked everything up, ran it. I'm a little bit embarrassed to say, I think we had our most successful couple of months while I was off. I don't know what that says.
Oh, well, that does wonders for the ego, right? When you're off of
them. Maybe because I wasn't bothering them with new, my crazy ideas or something like that. But yeah, I have full trust in the team. Everyone knows what they're doing. You know, we're big on accountability and, you know, we've got very open processes. We're using all these sort of different tools. So if someone goes off sick, you can just sort of pick things up and know what they're doing. So I think that transparency really helps. But it's, yeah, you have to have a plan.
Yeah. It's again, I love when I'm asking these questions from individuals like yourself who are leading, because there are quite a few who don't. They don't have one.
Yeah.
So busy chasing fires and trying to build stuff from scratch. The bigger picture hasn't really come through yet. And so they're not thinking, they're so busy just trying to hold on to stuff.
Yeah.
They're not thinking about the next level. So it's actually quite refreshing. And I'm hoping that there are people who are listening to this who are going to be really inspired to go, right, I do need to do this and I do need to do it as a priority. Not so that the staff can have excellent months without you being there, but just so that they know. Yeah. That.
So I'm sure that was just, you know, so
it's a blip.
I think funny enough, at the beginning of the pandemic, I think a lot of, you know, there was a lot of panic, wasn't there? And so many people were being affected. Yeah. We went into crisis mode, just like everybody else, but we ended up rewriting our entire agency strategy. I think in about sort of 4 weeks time, we just sort of almost sort of ripped it up and said, right, this is what we're going to focus on. It wasn't like complete pivot or anything like that, but it was just, these are the priorities.
Yes.
This is how we're going to help our clients. This is how we're going to sort of retain things. We want to sort of look after our people. And it was quite inspiring and, dare I say it, quite invigorating. I think it's that sort of perhaps entrepreneurial side of me of love sort of just coming up with new ideas and to be able to just sort of say, right, this is the focus. And I was sort of right back in the early days of what is the company going to look like? What is our priorities? What's our vision? And then articulating that to the rest of the agency. And they felt that it was a very sort of clear strategy. Perhaps we hadn't really done that before. So I think that sort of when you're in a sort of slight panic situation, you start thinking very, very clearly.
Yes.
Well, I do anyway.
No, definitely. And it's a good shout. You know, like yourself, I think one of the beginning of 2020 was not only the panic around COVID, but the panic around Black Lives Matter, the panic around an impending recession. And it was an opportunity for me to go, right, what is it I'm really, really going to double down and do here?
Yeah.
The thing that I came out of it was around inclusive leadership. That was my bag. That was the thing I was going to hang my hat off. And to your point, I was sat there going, okay, how's this going to work? How is this really going to work now? Now that people aren't there. And then all of a sudden my phone started ringing off the hook. We started, everybody wanted to create a Zoom or Teams call. No. And then I realized I actually don't even have to leave my house. This is actually quite, my expenses have gone all the way down and income's going up, you know. So, yeah, to your point, you're living what you do, right? So you've seen the crisis and you've taken that step back and thought through exactly how you're going to take the next level. I love that. Absolutely. Yeah. So I'm going to go personal now and I'm going to ask you to be as honest as I can about, if I'm going to ask those who you lead, what you do really well, and then what they say you can improve on. Let's start with what you can do well, because most people default to what you can improve on. So we're going to go with what you do well first. And no, then what you can improve.
Well, actually, there's probably been a bit of a theme. I would say that staying calm in a crisis is actually a sort of a strength. And I think being able to sort of lead through that is something that I am quite proud of. I just kind of go into a bit of a zone. And probably because we've done so many simulations, I've been trained. I would also say the openness and the transparency, and that, you know, I'm not afraid to be a bit vulnerable with my team. So I think that openness and transparency is good. And I do have this thing of being the chief eternal optimist rather than the CEO. I refuse to not be positive, even when, you know, shit's hitting the fan or whatever. It's just something that it's kind of hardwired into me. I think I'm a bit annoying sometimes. It's kind of, but I'm taking it as a positive.
Yes.
I suppose the side that I have really had to work on, and this came out in the DISC training actually, and we did this whole. So DISC training was started by Patrick Lencioni, and he has this great book, Five Dysfunctions of a Team. Yeah. And we went through some training where we, as an exec team, we sort of look at our vulnerability and trust and build accountability. And during that process, we all had to sort of share perhaps what so great. We had to sort of share what was going on, you know, how we viewed each other.
Yeah.
And it was hard because I was receiving this feedback that I'm not great at conflict and therefore being direct. Mm-hmm. So I'm a bit of a people pleaser. Okay. I'm self-aware enough of this to know that I'm a bit of a people pleaser. Yeah. Therefore, I wasn't always being direct when I had to deliver critical feedback.
Mm.
And so I would avoid it.
Yes.
And what that was doing was meaning that people weren't really feeling that they could challenge. And sometimes I would have like these amazing ideas and there was one where sort of talked before about that we decided to go into Australia, and I was like, this is such a great idea, let's go. And some of the team were being a bit more sensible that actually maybe it wasn't the best move for us to go in, to sort of, we were trying to grow into Asia at the time, and we just kind of didn't do it right. But we could have done it better, but I was just sort of ignoring all of that. And they didn't quite feel that we hadn't created this environment where we could all challenge each other.
Yeah.
And that was down to me. And that's kind of pretty hard when you sort of think, oh God, I've created this environment where everyone thinks you have to be positive and happy all the time.
Yeah.
And actually I've done a lot of work on that. Yeah. And I now see feedback as a gift.
Yes.
And I'm much better at sort of being direct. I still struggle a bit, but it's kind of just a bit more self-aware.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. And to your point, I think I call myself a pragmatist, right? So I will be incredibly positive, but I'm going, oh, I'm not quite sure. And it is learning. It is learning. And yes, I'm a big fan of DISC. It's one of the few assessment tools that I will bet my house on.
Yeah,
I'm a bit weary and nervous of the other ones just because of rigor and testing and all the rest of it. But I'm a big fan like yourself of that kind of assessment. And I love the fact that you have that sense of provision for training and self-awareness in your leadership. And that's incredibly powerful. Okay, let me finish up on the last one then. So obviously, as the CEO and the founder of these organizations, and having done it for a number of years, I know obviously you mentioned some external voices and some external mentors and role models that you look to. So I'm quite, and this is a loaded question, right? So just work with me, even though I'm stepping out of coach mode at the moment. This is very loaded. But is the leadership that you have, is it shaped by the companies that you have built, or is it something more?
It's such an interesting question. I still don't know if I know the answer, because I do believe that leadership can be taught.
Yes.
People can be trained. I do wonder if there's a sort of a natural, some instincts that are formed when you're younger. I also really acknowledge my privilege that I had you know, parents who were working, and my mother owned, she sort of ran her own company. She was, well, she was a teacher, and she was a working mother. My father was, he's passed away now, I'm afraid, but he was very much a company man, you know, VP of sales for like an insurance company. And I learned from them. Yes. And I guess that's my privilege, that not everybody has that. And I think along the way, I had various sort of mentors. So I think perhaps I had a bit of a head start. Yeah. And a confidence, again, from my education. I think everything sort of gives you that, which is why I'm sort of passionate about trying to help people who don't have all of those privileges growing up, because I genuinely do think that leadership can be taught. Yeah. And it's about your experiences as well. So, yeah, it's a mixed answer, but hopefully an interesting one.
No, definitely, definitely. I've never shared my opinion on this on my podcast before. It's my podcast. I'm going to share it with you now. I'm really fascinated by cooperatives.
Right.
I think of Ricardo Semler in Brazil. I think of the Cooperative Bank. I think of some of the ones that have been up in Spain and what have you. And I love the idea of a cooperative and the fact that you can build, to a lesser extent, things like Patagonia as well, that you can build this incredible enterprise that serves your community, without losing the sense that there is a commercial angle to it as well, but also knowing that people who come on the journey with you feel that they deserve to be in the organization.
Yeah.
And so my leadership is very much based around in whatever, whether I'm the founder of the company or whether I'm sitting on the board as a NED or a trustee, or historically, you know, people ask me to chair, my leadership is driven by this collaboration piece. I really want to collaborate. Interestingly, you made a point before about saying competitive. I'm actually competitive with myself, I think, more than anything else. But I look and I go, this world is so big that in the grand scheme of things, I'm not really competing with anybody but myself, because it's so big. Who can I collaborate with? Who are the individuals that I can talk to kind of do that? And a lot of that is driven from the concept of the cooperative. And again, part of it is seeing my parents come to the UK from the Caribbean in the late 60s, not have access to finance or favorable finance for mortgages, houses, and what have you, and be part of a rotating credit union, where it's deemed illegal. Because the FCA says you don't know exactly where the money is, and people are like, look, we knew where we got our money from. But it was beautiful that they had this hand. So and they call it committee in Pakistan, or partner in the Caribbean. And you literally, everybody put in 100 quid for the sake of argument, and there were 10 of you. And then at one point, one of you gets this lump sum of £1,000, which you can put down on a house or buy a car. And I absolutely love that, because it was built on trust. No one was going to mess about, because we knew where everybody lived. We knew your family, and then you're not going to bring shame on yourself. But it was this amazing element of trust, and that stuff has just stayed with me, that trust and collaboration and partnership. So wherever my leadership goes, rather than it just being the company, it's that wider sense of cooperation and collaboration that really drives me. I've never said that out loud before. It feels really nice to say it.
And it's so important, because I've always sort of seen that, you know, because I came from this background of starting the company around community management, and, you know, community for me is really running a company, because it is a community. Yes. And it has, you know, so you have to manage it in that same way, and you have to sort of pay attention to individuals, but the comms are so important, and setting the vision and that sense of purpose that people have that brings them together.
Yes.
You know, it is a community, and perhaps that's how we should all be running our companies in the future.
100%, 100%. Tamara, I am so happy. We're at the end, time goes so quick. But I'm so happy I got this opportunity to have this conversation. Somehow I'm going to get it so that our assistants get us to meet again, because we have to. This energy is too good, I have to do that. But really happy. Thank you so much for taking the time out to share your insights. I will make sure that there are links to your companies and your profile in the show notes. Yeah, really appreciate you. Thank you. It was well worth the wait.
Thank you so much, David.
Dave McQueen Podcast is a Q Talent Management production. Theme music is Biscuit by Lacrimbo.